winter blanket, and there was little sign of any life, except for a sullen coiling movement near the center that looked like a large reptile of some kind.
We'd like a room for the night, please.
The rooming house was run by a couple of deaf mutes in their middle 20s. The wife put out her hand, holding up four fingers. Patty laboriously counted his coins, then handed the greasy jack to the woman.
Upstairs?
The man grinned a mouthful of yellow teeth as he nodded once. As Ryan and Patty walked down the hall toward the stairs, they passed an open room where three men were playing cards. Out of sheer habit, Ryan weighed them up, checking out what weapons they carried. He put them down as hired hands, the kind that wouldn't argue too much about what kind of work they got paid for. There were two narrow beds in the room, each with an undersheet and three threadbare blankets. The chamber itself was fairly clean, with scrubbed pine flooring. The window looked across the contaminated lake, and there were two pictures on the walls. One was a pallid watercolor of a small church set against the background of what Ryan recognized as the Tetons. The other picture was much older, in dark oils, showing a Spanish duenna riding a high-spirited stallion in front of a Moorish mansion. There was a caption beneath it.
Dona Maria Elena Cantrell riding Firestart in front of the ranch of her father.
Mighty pretty slut.
I'm not sure that slut's the right word for someone like that, Patty. Something a little more classy.
You say so. See them three shitters at the table down the stairs?
Sure.
Playing cards.
Ryan nodded. The journey had tired him more than he'd expected, and the bed looked amazingly inviting. The old man grinned, showing the mix of rotten and missing teeth, like peering into a long-lost graveyard.
Figure to go and show the hick fuckers how to play some serious poker.
You take it easy, Patty. There's three of them and one of you. And they didn't look like good losers to me.
Patty showed Ryan the slim-bladed cutthroat razor that he kept inside his shirt.
Slice them shitters thin and raw if they fuck with me. Young blood spills easy, Ryan. Anyways, I get trouble. I'll call and you can come running.
Sure. You just take it careful.
Ryan lowered himself onto the bed and lay back with his hands behind his head. He wasn't totally sure what had awakened him. It seemed as though there'd been a shout or a disturbance from somewhere else in the rooming house, down the stairs in the room beneath him. But now there was only late afternoon stillness. Ryan swung his legs over the side of the bed, ready to get up.
Patty.
Ryan felt the familiar prickling at his nape. There was something wrong, but he couldn't quite turn his mind to what it was. There hadn't been any shooting, he was certain of that. Ryan stood, glancing sideways out the window, seeing from the light and the shadows that he'd been sleeping for something between half and three quarters of an hour. Ryan's hand was on the butt of the Sig Sauer, ready to draw it.
Is that you, Patty?
Yeah.
The little man stood in the doorway, his face like parchment, his left hand clasped tight across his belly, the other still holding the doorknob. For several long heartbeats, he didn't move.
Trouble?
There was a slight, almost imperceptible nod of the head. The room was in shadow, but Ryan thought he could see something glinting off the old man's fingers.
Won't be to the fill with you. Sorry. Never had much friends. Sorry.
He knelt down very carefully, as though he were on a precious oriental carpet. Blood flowed from his stomach across the floor. Ryan looked down at the body for a moment. Ryan recalled the trader's advice on staying alive in Deathlands as he stood by the body of the little old man that had saved his life.
Find yourself in a hole. Get out of it.
It didn't matter much what had happened downstairs at the poker table. Perhaps Patty had cheated or tried to cheat, or the three men had combined to cheat him. The only hard fact was that Patty Maxwell was very dead, his stomach sliced open with a long blade. And his killers were at the top of the stairs, coming for Ryan. Nothing else mattered. Ryan glanced around the room, considering the possibility of using the window to escape. He who didn't fight but ran away lived to run away another day. That was another of the self-evident truths that the traitor had held to. But the layers of cream paint looked solid and cracked all around the frame, as though the window hadn't actually been opened in years. which turned the bedroom into a trap. Ryan's combat-honed mind weighed the possibilities, coming up with the answer that had occurred to him first. Get out shooting. The door still stood open, and he didn't hesitate a moment longer. He dived through it, out into the passage. He came up in the classic gunman's crouch on the far side and sighted down the barrel of the Sig Sauer P226. The first one went down to a headshot, as sticky chunks of bone and brain tumbled to the floor. Thankfully, the youth near him was partly blinded by a face full of his boss's gore as he held out his double-action Smith & Wesson.
Bastard!
The last man standing of the trio fumbled with his .22 for a moment, then dropped it. Ryan had a moment to aim as the man reached for his gun. Below the entrance wound, the man's right eye dangled over his cheek. All three bodies were in a tangle of limbs, with blood splashed over the upper walls. Ryan stood, watching them, in case another bullet was needed. The leader was stout, with long hair tied back with a length of green ribbon. He held a Civil War bayonet in his right hand, its narrow shaft slick with blood. In his left hand was what Ryan had spotted downstairs, a Heckler & Koch automatic, looking like the P9 S-45, the model that had been rechambered to take the .45 caliber round. At his shoulder was the youngest of the three, peach fuzz on his pale cheeks. He had a Smith & Wesson double-action revolver, the 64 model. The third of the trio was holding a pocket pony, a rare single-action six-shot .22 caliber revolver. One of the things that had rung small alarm bells for Ryan when he'd passed the trio downstairs was their weaponry. The guns were good ones, in top condition, not the kind you associated with drifters.
Stoops. Coldheart Stoops.
He noticed now that the youngest of the corpses had a deep, fresh cut across the inside of his right arm, where the sliced material of his shirt flapped, blood-stained. It looked very much like the cut you might get from an enraged old man wielding a cutthroat razor. Maybe Patty Maxwell had it coming, after all. Either way, it didn't matter. You can't breathe life back into a corpse. Ryan went into the bedroom to get his coat. He then walked past the butchered trio, stepping through their pooling blood. He went cautiously down the stairs, expecting the gunfire to have brought some eager and possibly murderous spectators, but the lobby was deserted. Then he noticed that the young wife was on the far side, near the half-open front door, polishing the top of a player piano, her back to him. For a moment, Ryan was totally confused at her seeming indifference to the butchery that had been carried out upstairs in her house. Then he remembered that she and her husband were both deaf. Ryan considered creeping past her and sneaking out of the building into the darkness of evening. Then he stopped, not wanting any sort of alarm. If he'd known that her husband was safely out of the way, he might have succumbed to the temptation to quiet her while he escaped. At that moment, she had to have sensed his presence or the movement of his shadow, and she turned with a startled expression on her face. Ryan managed to paste a smile in place, holding out both hands to show that he hadn't meant her any harm.
Sorry to make you jump.
She shrugged, then walked quickly to the desk and started thumbing through a box filled with rectangles of white card, picking one out to show him.
Supper in a half hour. That'll be fine.
She pulled out another card.
No thanks. I don't need a bath.
He was desperately conscious of the blood that splattered all over his boots, but they were out of sight behind the registry desk. She pointed upstairs.
No, he's taking a rest in the room.
The woman smiled and nodded, looking intently at Ryan and rubbing her stomach.
What? Oh, am I hungry? Yeah, guess I am.
He could smell the delicious aromas of roasting meat filtering along into the lobby from the kitchen. Patty Maxwell hadn't been too strong on cooking, and it was tempting to take a chance on the four corpses remaining undiscovered in the quiet upstairs corridor while he snatched a quick meal.
I'm going for a short walk. Get me some fresh air. I'll be back in time for supper.
The risk was too great, and the last thing he needed was to get hauled up in a small pest hole involved in a multiple murder. In places like this, it wasn't that hard for a penniless stranger to finish up dancing on the end of a length of hemp. The woman nodded again and smiled. Ryan turned left, heading westward, in the general direction of the township of Twin Forks. He had put 4 or 5 miles between himself and the small ville, far enough to be reasonably safe that no one was going to come after him.
fire blast.